It's Friday the 13th, and Mike Malloy is nowhere to be found. This is Nightmare on Malloy Street.
The whole thing is just a dream.
With Brad Friedman.
Wake up!
Yes. Wake up! Wake up! This is your Mike Malloy Show. Welcome back to it. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com here with your nightmare. We are broadcasting live tonight as Mike has the night off. He likes to duck out, apparently, on Friday the 13th. I don't know what the hell he's thinking. Oh, by the way, my thanks to Shano and Kenny Pick for those great Friday the 13th Nightmare on Malloy Street clips that we've been playing all night long. Our friends from RadioOrNot.com. And, of course, Shano himself is now up there with Tom Hartman. And, oh, speaking of Tom Hartman and what we're about to talk about anyway, let's see, do we have this? There was a, someone called in. We're going to talk about Wisconsin. So, hey, Madison, wake up. I know you're listening on the mic 92.1 FM out there. It may be the middle of the night. They run delayed out there, but I think it's 1 a.m. You're listening. Wake up. We're talking about you, Wisconsin. And apparently the Tom Hartman show, someone called in and they were talking about me this week.
Get Brad Friedman on this story, because I think he cautioned everyone before Wisconsin. And said, he said there's no way you can actually paper tally everything in Wisconsin.
And he's right. We've had Brad on this program many times. We'll have him on again. And Brad has been on this from day one. He's one of the very best reporters out there. BradBlog.com is his website, and you should check it out.
You should check it out. Thanks, Tom, and thanks whoever that caller was. And thanks, Shano, for sending us over that clip. I didn't hear it this week. Yes, on election night, I was trying to warn people. Frankly, I was warning people before election night up there in Wisconsin that the entire state does not bother to verify a single ballot, a single paper ballot, before they announce the winner or the loser of these elections. They just... Is that you? Yeah, that's you. Yeah, we're blaming it on Phil tonight. Way to go, Phil. They don't bother to verify a single ballot as far as whether it is been counted accurately by the optical scan voting systems. And I warned people because just months before, down there in March, down in Palm Beach County, Florida, we had Sequoia optical scan voting systems that named two candidates who had lost the race to actually be the winner. And before that, New York City, the New York Daily News, did a public records request to look at the ballots from the 2010 election, when they had just gotten their brand new optical scan systems up there in the South Bronx. And they found that thousands and thousands of votes had been miscounted in the 2010 election. This was 2 years later. We're talking about months ago they just discovered this. If you're familiar with HBO's documentary, Hacking Democracy, we saw Diebold machines that were actually hacked. Paper ballot op-scan machines that were hacked to flip the results. The only way you would know is if you bothered to count the ballots by hand, instead of relying on the computers. I've been trying to warn people about that. Well, on election night, you will recall, if you were paying attention to the Wisconsin recall, they told us when the polls closed at 8 o'clock that, oh, this is going to be tight. We don't know. Will Governor Scott Walker survive this recall, or will his challenger, the Democrat Tom Barrett, win? We don't know, because the exit polls all day, people coming out of the polls, had told us that it was neck and neck, that it was a tie, that we were actually going to have to find out what the ballots actually said before we knew who won. We're going to be talking to a Republican and a Democrat in Wisconsin who are actually trying to find out if, in fact, Scott Walker actually won. And by the way, I forgot to mention our chat room. Go to BradBlog.com. We got a chat room up there, sponsored tonight by ScribbleLive.com, who saved our butts tonight. Thanks, Scribble Live, for offering your chat services. Really appreciate it. ScribbleLive.com. But the fact is, when the winner was finally announced about 30 or 40 minutes later, after they said it was going to be too close, all we knew was what the computers told us. And Rachel Maddow, for example, wondered what the hell went wrong, why things changed, why it was so close and all of a sudden things changed. Here's what she said before this disappears into the memory hole. Here's what Rachel Maddow said when she was trying to figure out what the hell went on.
So the polling ahead of this election showed Scott Walker ahead. Tom Barrett never led in any polls leading into this. But especially in the exit polling today, it looked like it was going to be very, very close. In the end, it was not very close. Do we know yet what happened?
I've been trying to figure that out myself because we were expecting a long night, maybe not even a call tonight. Not until the morning, and you kept watching the returns come in, and the pile got bigger and bigger, and Walker was up double digits. He was up high double digits for a while. Now the latest numbers that I've seen show about 10 points, maybe a little bit less than 10 points, which is larger than his margin in 2010. So I'm quite surprised and don't know exactly what was off in the measurement, whether there was a participation problem with people supporting Walker not responding to the exit pollsters. That's always a possibility, but I haven't heard that explained yet.
And okay, so nobody has any idea. It was not explained then. It was not explained now. It has not been explained since. Nobody knows why the exit polls showed a virtual tie after a day of polling all over the state by professional exit pollsters. Nobody knows why it was tied, and then suddenly, within about 40 minutes, boom, Scott Walker wins. It was double digits. What the hell went on? Well, in Wisconsin, people are trying to find out. What are they doing? They're actually bothering to count the paper ballots. The paper ballots that nobody has counted in the Badger State. Nobody has bothered to look at these goddamn paper ballots and make sure that Scott Walker actually beat Tom Barrett. Maybe he did. But we don't know. Is this any kind of way to run a democracy? Well, the ballots can be destroyed in the state of Wisconsin within 2 weeks after the election is certified. But some folks, several groups in Wisconsin now, have filed public records requests to see those ballots, to look at them for themselves before they are destroyed. And when they file a public records request, that should keep them from being destroyed. But for some reason, the Government Accountability Board, that's the top election agency in Wisconsin, the state GAB, as they call it, the GAB, and some of the clerks at the counties and municipalities around the state have been trying to keep people from actually looking at these ballots. WisconsinWave.org is now trying to help raise money to have citizens go in and look at every goddamn ballot in the state of Wisconsin to make sure that Scott Walker actually won. Working on that effort are a couple of folks. Two of them are going to join us. First, let's go to Margie Lambert, Ph.D., a safety consultant for a safety consulting business. Her specialties include biological safety, chemical safety, biotechnology, and environmental health. You know, scientific stuff. She is also working with the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, part of their senior and disability outreach program. I don't know that the effort here is a part of that her work with the Democratic Party or not, but do I have her on? There we go. But she has been attempting to file public records requests in every county in Wisconsin so that she and other fellow citizens can actually find out who won or lost last June 5th. Margie Lambert, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Thanks, Brad. Good to be with you.
Good to have you here. Have I explained this correctly? Have I explained the effort that you guys are going after right now in Wisconsin correctly?
Yes, you've explained it very well. I would just say one thing. I did work for the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. I don't currently work for the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, and this is a citizen effort.
This is a citizen effort, not a Democratic Party effort. And if anybody has any questions about that, let me just bring on my other guest here, John Washburn. He's an election integrity advocate from Fair Elections of Wisconsin, and he is identifies himself as a Republican, occasionally a Ron Paul Republican, and he was a supporter of Scott Walker's. Hey, John, welcome back, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
Thank you for having me on. Welcome, Marjorie.
All right. Great to have you both here. Margie, let's see. Before we, and now we're almost to a break, but so you've made these public records requests across the state, and you will be counting ballots based on these public records requests. Are the clerks allowing you to see these ballots at this time?
It depends on the county. We've already been in this week to Rock County, which was a very good experience.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very open and transparent experience. The clerk had, despite the GAB saying treating this as a recount, it is not a recount. A recount is when the results have not yet been decided.
Mm-hmm.
This is a public records, an open records request. The results have already been certified. We just want to get in there and actually be able to hand count the ballots. So the Rock County experience was very good, and because of that, she has been talking to other county clerks, letting them know that really we're not questioning the integrity of the workers, of the clerks, of the clerk staff, the poll workers, et cetera. We're questioning the integrity of the machines, and that's what we want, to be able to go in there, hand count, use the gold standard of election integrity and actually hand count the ballots.
Oh, well, that would be a nice change of pace, actually verified. Yeah. John Washburn, none of these ballots that were counted by machines have actually been verified by human beings until now, have they, John?
Correct. There's one effort after the presidential election where one ward, in depending on the machine type, was checked. But other than that, no. This is certainly the first only citizen one.
So as a supporter of Scott Walker's, John Washburn, do you trust the results that were reported by the computers across the state of Wisconsin?
I think that they are without evidence that the numbers are true or false. No, I don't. The answer is no.
Faith-based voting. All right, we got to take a quick break.
It's best.
Yeah,
that's the best way to describe it.
So you don't think that she's a that Margie is a crazy loon conspiracy theorist, sore loser?
Not at all.
Thank you, John. Hang on, everybody. Margie Lambert, and Democrat, and John Washburn, Republican, are here to talk about recounting, or at least counting, Wisconsin. I'm Brad. Stay with us.
Sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit.
Our friend For Earth says in the BradBlog.com chat room, this is so effing obvious. How can the people who want to keep using these machines continue with their argument on this? Look at Ireland. They all got smart before they ever started using them, and they dumped them all. That is true. A week or two ago, we had the story at BradBlog.com that they have literally scrapped all electronic voting systems in the nation of Ireland. They figured out right away that these machines were no good. They got rid of them. We also figured out that they were no good, but we're still using them. And we use them up in Wisconsin for this historic recall election. We will be using them in November for the presidential election. And nobody bothers to verify that the ballots counted. We're talking about paper ballots, guys. Not just these crappy touchscreens, which are 100% unverifiable, but these paper ballot op scan machines. Nobody bothers to verify the votes before they announce the winners and the losers. And that's what happened on June 5th in Wisconsin. Did Scott Walker win? Maybe. I don't know. You don't know. Margie Lambert, Democrat, doesn't know. She's my guest here. John Washburn, Republican, Scott Walker supporter. He doesn't know. He's also my guest here. Margie Lambert, explain. So you're doing this public records request. What kind of pushback have you received in trying to look at the ballots before they are destroyed to make sure that Scott Walker actually won and Tom Barrett actually lost?
Well, unfortunately, because GAB is treating this as a recount rather than an open records request, they're mandating, they're dictating, or certainly strongly urging the county clerks to not let us touch the ballots. So when we go in, they would have the workers hold up the ballots while we could count. This would take a lot of their staff time, would take much longer time for us. And that was why it was a great compromise that the Rock County clerk came up with, which is basically that we wear gloves. So if they're concerned about the integrity of the ballots, we'll be wearing gloves while we're counting. That way it can be an open and transparent process, but at the same time, if they have any concerns about us doing something to the ballots are protected.
John Washburn, wearing gloves, they're acting like this is a recount. They were prepared to destroy these ballots but for these public records requests. Am I correct?
Correct. They were slated for destruction on July 6th, had they not been come entangled with an open records request.
And so are all of the counties now keeping these ballots so they can be counted by human beings for the first time?
Go
ahead, John.
Oh, no, I didn't know who was.
Go ahead, John. What's your answer on that, John?
I was going to say, if there is an open request entangling them, yes, they must be preserved until the open records request is satisfied or the denial and possible litigation has been resolved.
But one county has already destroyed their ballots, have they not?
I was mistaken in that.
Okay,
they destroyed the non-voted ones, and it was confusingly worded, but he basically said, I have deigned to preserve the voted ones, even though you didn't ask me for them.
Okay, very cool.
In Manitowoc.
I'm glad to know that those are still available. I've got about 15 seconds here left. Margie, from what the ballots you have been able to look at so far, are you finding discrepancies that concern you?
We have found discrepancies in Racine County. We have not found any in Rock County.
This story will also continue, Margie. I want to find out about those discrepancies. Margie Lambert and John Washburn, thanks for your efforts, guys. I got to get out. Brad, in for Malloy.
Has the night off, and Brad Friedman is the only voice you hear on your radio. It's Friday the 13th. Nightmare on Malloy Street. Rated GOP 17. Right wingers not admitted without an adult.
Yeah, it's your nightmare and mine, and welcome to it. In for Mike Malloy. Tonight we'll be taking your calls, by the way, in the next hour if you want to start queuing up now. Sounded very European of me, didn't it?
That makes me nervous.
Yeah.
When you do
queuing
that.
Up now,
queuing up the
queuing
callers
up now. Why does that make you nervous?
Well, because anything can happen after that.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
It could.
You're warning them.
I know.
You're giving them a heads up, and now they're going to call.
That's
and,
right.
Okay.
These are their public airwaves. We're going to let them talk about whatever the hell they want to talk about.
You're so much nicer than I would be.
I'm nicer than everybody. That is, of course, Phil Giangrande. He is the reason tonight is a nightmare, sitting in for Tony Sorrentino as our engineer. Our phone number is 877-520-1150 if you'd like to queue up, as they say. 877-520-1150 for anything we've been talking about tonight or anything else that's on your mind. We'll also have some green news with Desi Doyen coming up after the top of the hour as well. And before I move, some business. Okay, we were up against the clock as usual in that last segment. I wanted to say that if you'd like to support that effort to actually, you know, verify the votes in the Wisconsin recall, actually make sure that Scott Walker did beat Tom Barrett, because, you know, what could possibly go wrong with those electronic voting systems? You can do that. Go to WisconsinWave.org. Specifically, I think you can go straight to WisconsinWave.org/handcount. And you can both contribute to the effort. If you're out of the state, they need funding to support this effort all across the state. But also, if you're in state or nearby, you can volunteer there to help. And Margie Lambert says that after this came out just a couple of days ago, they've had hundreds of people sign up to volunteer to count in the counties across the state to look at these paper ballots and to make sure that they got it right. One of the things that we didn't get to was there was a recount a couple of days ago in this Senate race, in District 21 state Senate race, that also took place on that that June 5th recall election. And that's where the Democrat beat the incumbent by about 800 votes. Well, these folks went into that recount, and they were actually looking at the Walker Barrett race as the ballots were being counted, and what they saw was quite concerning in some of the wards in Racine. That is one of the things that has led to this effort. So stop by WisconsinWave.org and throw them a few dollars if you can, if you think that our elections actually matter, if you think that we ought to actually verify our ballots before we announce who the elected officials are in this country. If you're able to sign up and help the effort in person on the ground, they're going to need a lot more than hundreds of folks. Actually, they could use thousands of folks, because we've got, I think it's 72 different counties across the state of Wisconsin, there are about 3 million ballots to be counted by human beings. Imagine that in a democracy. All right, moving on here. Yes, your nightmare continues. This from truthout.org this week, from Jeffrey Kay and Jason Leopold. Detainees in custody of the U.S. military were interrogated while drugged with powerful antipsychotic and other medications that could impair an individual's ability to provide accurate information, according to a declassified Department of Defense Inspector General's report that probed the alleged use of mind-altering drugs during interrogations. In addition, detainees were subjected to chemical restraints. That's a quote from the report. Chemical restraints. That creeps me out right there. Hydrated with intravenous fluids while they were being interrogated. And in what appears to be a form of psychological manipulation, the Inspector General's probe confirmed at least one detainee, convicted dirty bomb plotter Jose Padilla, was the subject of a, quote, deliberate ruse in which interrogators led him to believe he was given an injection of truth serum. Truthout.org obtained a copy of the report titled Investigation of Allegations of the Use of Mind-Altering Drugs to Facilitate Interrogations of Detainees. Sounds like a report that would come out of Nazi Germany, to be frank. Investigations of allegations of the use of mind-altering drugs to facilitate interrogations of detainees, prepared by the U.S. Department of Defense Deputy Inspector General for Intelligence in September of 2009. Under a Freedom of Information Act request that Truthout had filed nearly 2 years ago, they finally received this report, and it is disturbing, to say the least. To speak about how disturbing it is, I'm joined now by the co-author of that article at Truthout, Jason Leopold, investigative journalist and author of the best-selling, the LA Times bestseller, News Junkie, a memoir. Jason Leopold, welcome, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Brad, how are you? And if I can just say that I think it's appropriate that you have a guy named Jason on Friday the 13th.
Yes, you're right. Are you wearing your hockey mask even as you...
I'm always wearing my hockey mask.
I see. Welcome, Jason, to the Mike Malloy's Nightmare on Malloy Street. Okay, this report is incredibly disturbing to me.
It is.
What in looking at this report, what jumped off the page at you and your co-author, Jeffrey Kay, as far as the most disturbing elements of the report?
The most disturbing elements were the fact that they were interrogating these prisoners with medication that they knew would produce unreliable information. The detainees were injected with psychoactive antipsychotic medication, and that medication, such as Haldol, which is identified in the report, is known to, or rather the Inspector General says that you can't trust the information you get from anyone. So the detainees were, diagnosed as severely mentally ill in some respects, or in some cases, and here they are questioning them. And then when you start to look at what's happening with the same detainees, these very same detainees, when they're challenging their detention in habeas corpus proceedings before the D.C. Circuit, the system that's set up is, by the government, or rather by that court, everything that the detainees say is presumed to be true. So it's sort of this whole snowball effect, and I think ultimately it was just to get false confessions.
Were the judges, I guess the JAGs or whoever was, who was hearing these habeas corpus hearings? Are these civilian courts or these military courts?
This is a civilian court.
Okay.
And basically what would happen is, at least right now, so in a way, habeas itself has been, gutted, but that is a whole different story. But the way that the system set up is that, their attorneys, their civilian attorneys, would go into court, and the government would respond, and in some cases they'd say, we challenge, the defense would challenge the veracity of these admissions that the detainees had made, and basically what the judge says is, look, we're going to find in favor of the government. Everything that the detainee says is presumed to be true. The burden's on the detainee to prove what he said is not true. And then here you have this report that says, hey, guess what? We drugged them. We injected them with high doses of antipsychotic that antipsychotics, you can't trust that info.
And
it's disturbing.
And that was what I'm wondering. Was the judge told, or were the judges told, that these prisoners were actually under the influence of these antipsychotic drugs during the trials?
No. In fact, they were not told that. This report, Brad, is really the first admission by the government that this was happening. People have suspected it, and perhaps the reaction from some would be, well, I'm not surprised to hear that. But it is the first admission by the government. So when the lawyers would go into court and discuss the claims, their source is the detainees. It's not as if they have access, first of all, to, the medical records. It's very difficult for them to get that. So they don't know, that this was happening. Nobody has ever seen this report. So it's very newsworthy, if you will, at least the way that the attorneys look at it, because now they perhaps have something that they can use.
Why did this take 2 years for the Department of Defense to deliver this? I know that several senators, I believe even Joe Biden at the time, back in, I want to say 2008, when they had heard hints about the use of forcibly drugging these detainees, that they had asked, I think they had asked for this report. Why did it take 2 years before it was released to the public?
It's a great question. I mean, you know, the way that the government will explain it is that, oh, well, you know, we have a backlog with regard to all the various Freedom of Information Act requests that that we have to deal with. Then, in addition to that, because this everything was classified, it literally, you know, went through. Every agency had to clear it. In fact, the letter that we received that basically says, who signed off on it. These are top officials. They took quite a bit of time to look at it. The redactions are minimal. But really, getting into another area, you know, the report names Jose Padilla.
Mm-hmm.
And Jose Padilla had a torture lawsuit against the Bush administration. And that was rejected by various courts and, you know, an appeals court rejected it as well just recently. And just last month, his lawyer sought, to have the Supreme Court take this up.
What?
And the Supreme Court rejected it. And right after the Supreme Court rejected it, Brad, literally, this report was released.
That's when they released it. I understand.
I mean, seriously, because the claims in Jose Padilla's lawsuit was that he was actually, you know, injected, for example, with what they said, LSD and PCP. And, you know, years ago, the military brig where he was held, the technical director there said, no, he was given a flu shot. He was never given any of that. Well, this report that we have states that Jose Padilla was the subject of a deliberate ruse in which his interrogator led him to believe he was being given a shot of truth serum, when in fact they say it was a flu shot.
Jason, will he have another? Will Jose Padilla, for example, have another chance given the new information to go back to the Supreme Court?
Yes, I mean he could. His attorney could actually take this and go to the Supreme Court.
What years? Actually, got to get to a break here shortly. But what years are we talking about that this was happening? And do we know if it continues to happen to this day?
It was covered from 2001 to 2008. The Pentagon will not say if it's happening to this day.
They won't say.
They will
not
say it.
From 2001 to 2008, and today they won't say. So that, if I do the quick math there, about 2021 or so, we'll find out if it's happening today. Jason Leopold from truthout.org. Stick with us. I got a couple more questions for you after the break. You're listening to Brad Friedman. This is your Nightmare on Molloy Street, Friday the 13th. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Friday the 13th, and this is your Nightmare on Molloy Street. Brad Friedman in for Mike Molloy. He'll be back with you Monday, and your long national nightmare will be over. Until then, it's me. By the way, we'll be taking your calls next hour at 877-520-1150 if you'd like to get in line. We're speaking with Jason Leopold of truthout.org about his new piece on the Department of Detainee and their declassified report on the alleged drugging of detainees down at Guantanamo. It's a pretty appalling report. Jason, here is Brandon Neely, who was a former Guantanamo guard who was at the prison facility the day it opened on this is from your story, in January 2002, told Truth Out, quote, "Medics never informed the detainees what the medication was. The medics walked around with little white cups that had pills in it a couple of times a day," he said. He added that if the detainees refused to take it, an immediate reaction force, that's a quote, an immediate reaction force team who guards would call to deal with resistant and combative detainees would administer the medication to prisoners by force. Are these medical officers who were forcing these drugs on these people?
No, these were the medical medical officers were the ones, you know, the medics walking around with the white cups.
Right.
And if the detainees refused to take it, then the, you know, this immediate reaction force, they call it the IRF team, IRF, would come in. And they were basically like a real brute police force. You know, you said that, as you noted, the detainees were not being told what they were, you know, what they were given, and therein lies, you know, much of the psychological torture. You know, that's where.
Well, how is this medically ethical?
It's not medically ethical at all by any means. In fact, we have, you know, we interviewed Jeff Kay and I, the former president of Physicians for Human Rights. You know, a human rights organization that has done a lot of work on torture issues, and he's over at Johns Hopkins now, and he's a medical ethicist, and he said that the failure to inform prisoners what drugs they were given means some basic principles of medical ethics were cast aside.
And you had, and I'm only I'm up against the clock, so I want to get a couple more questions in, Jason. There were these teams, these behavioral science consultant teams, made up of psychologists and mental health technicians. Again, weren't they working in violation of their oath in enforcing these psychotic drugs on people?
Absolutely. There's no question about it, and in fact, it's been the subject of quite a bit of controversy, you know, over the years. This area has really, it's been looked at, and there have been other stories written, but it's never really, you know, it has not come up to the level where it's, you know, you have people sort of shaking their fists, but it's a grave breach of medical ethics.
And chemical restraints, I don't even have time, they were used on detainees that posted a threat to themselves or other. What does that mean, chemical restraints?
I wish I could tell you that, Brad. I have tried to get the answers to find out exactly what chemical restraints are and whether it's still being used, and, you know, Department of Defense just refuses to answer.
This creeps the hell out of me, what is being done in my name as a U.S. citizen by my government and may still be going on to this day. The Department of Defense just doesn't think we deserve to know. Jason Leopold, thank you and Jeffrey Kay for your great work on this story. Check it out at truthout.org. Appreciate all you do, Jason. Keep up the good work, my friend.
Thank you.
All right. Brother. When we come back, Desi Doyen and the Green News Report, plus your calls at 877-520-1150. You're listening to Brad on the Mike Malloy Show.